We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host, Matt Harvey, and thanks to Victorian local labour laws easing, 75% of me can return to work in the office. This week, I have chosen not to put my left leg to work. As such, I dragged myself in here with the functioning economy of my two upper arms. I call them trickle-down and economics because they will be making it rain splashes of sparkling wine, that's spelled W-H-I-N-E, as we will go over the latest news. But before we do that, don't forget the best way to support this show is to support the man who makes the show by coming to my upcoming Melbourne International Comedy Festival show, the last ever run, at least in Australia, of my storytelling show, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once. The last time you will possibly have to hear that title. It's a storytelling show for true stories. And if you're interested in that sort of thing, come on and check it out before I am, by the bylaws of local comedy, forced to create a new show exploring the life of a solo artist in lockdown. A sweeping tour de force of monologues, jokes about Zoom, and accidentally masturbating while I am at work. All for no extra charge! Title pending, but feel free to vote on the following. A. I So Lonely. B. Honey, where are my pants? Oh, never mind, the government has cocked it up again, and it looks like we're going back to bed. C. The Brotherhood of the Travelling Sourdough Starter. Or D, eating well, having reliable income, and other things I can't sustain post-lockdown. You can tweet me your answers on twitter.com or shut them into a bag and tie it to a pigeon and send it to Australia. The competition will remain open until I remember that I wrote this and check for the answers. But until then, let me be the bearer of weird news. Let's start off with some headlines. Here we go. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern criticises Australia for stripping dual national terror suspects' citizenship. This is very Australian behaviour. Part of the deal allowing New Zealand to leave Australia long ago and to become its own independent country was that we get all the Maoris that we need as bouncers. Plus, we get our pick of citizens to claim as Australians. A Melbourne woman at the centre of the feud is a 25-year-old who, until last year, was a dual citizen of Australia and New Zealand. The woman, who had her Australian citizenship cancelled last year, is at the centre of a political spat between Australia and New Zealand after New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern accused Scott Morrison of an abrogation of responsibility over her case. The problem is, she is a genuinely good leader who knows big words and not a man pretending to be a fun dad at the barbecue who doesn't understand big words like responsibility. An 8-year-old has called out the NPR show All Things Considered for a distinct lack of dinosaur stories. The child said the show should instead be called Some Stuff Considered or Newsy Stuff Considered, which makes this kid the youngest member to take part in two ancient and much-loved traditions. Grandpa Simpson angry-style rants to the editor of a major news outlet and complaining when your friend gets way too into public radio. A church that worships AI has been shut down. I just hope that they took the time to shut it down properly, or they might damage the hard drive, inadvertently leading that damage to be later interpreted as the subjugation and torture of our Lord and Saviour, Asus Chrome. Scientists have cloned an endangered species for the first time. Now, which creature have they taken it upon themselves to try and save? Pandas? Elephants? tigers? No! Meet Elizabeth Ann, the black-footed fairy. Lizzie here was created from the cells of Willa, a black-footed ferret that lived more than 30 years ago. And so, upon being resurrected, Elizabeth was immediately put into de-radicalization training so that she won't be tempted to display her 90s extreme attitude. Could go poorly for everybody involved. Lego has released a new set to celebrate Amelia Earhart. The set contains her plane, the Lockheed Vega 5B. However, the Amelia minifigure is nowhere to be found. Scientists are aiming to send 6.7 million sperm samples to the moon to be stored in a seed vault inspired by Norway's seed vault. So, in the event of a population-destroying catastrophic event, all the remaining humans will have to do is invent some sort of safe space travel, safely land on the moon, and then battle the struggles of 1/6 gravity when attempting to turkey baste a sperm sample into an egg to bring the species back to life. Simple! Also, the seed vault will definitely be the last straw for any aliens considering visiting Earth. They'll be all, look, this species is loud, intrusive, and constantly infighting, but they might have been worth saving until they left, I mean, ostensibly, a giant metal condom full of jizz on the moon. Australia is creating a myth-busting unit to handle coronavirus misinformation. Health Minister Greg Hunt revealed the Departments of Home Affairs and Health had quietly established the unit last year amid concerns about misinformation. They are releasing the show on Stan because that's the only place that New Australian TV gets shown anytime soon, and they're going to be calling it Mythbusters Corona Edition. Now, we just need Adam Savage to come here, but to be honest, we can't really have him entering the country unless he learns to play tennis at a pro level. Look, maybe he can build a tennis-playing robot for an exhibition game. That should be good enough excuse to sneak him into the country. Al Jazeera has reported that indoor farming has gained popularity amid the pandemic and with new climate challenges. Look, let me just say, indoor farming has been popular for years. It really was only for one very specific crop, though. Exploitative tech company and company bringing you your noodles for lunch, DoorDash, has been revealed by payments.com to have spent $5.5 million to advertise the fact that they gave $1 million to charity. Okay, so they spent this money on a Super Bowl commercial featuring the Muppets from Sesame Street and former Hamilton actor and current Snowpiercer revolutionary David Diggs. Given the new addition of DoorDash to the side canon of the Sesame Street Extended Cinematic Universe, I expect we will soon be receiving a very special episode all about wage theft and the exploitative world of disruption capitalism. Brought to you by the number 0.5 and the letter U. I mean, it was supposed to be the number 2 and the letter W. But after paying for their own expenses, giving their cut to DoorDash, and then DoorDash taking all of their tips on top of that, they could only afford to bring in a single U. On to Google now. Google, the company, reminding you to get supplies for your upcoming baby that even you didn't know you were having yet, has become the target of another antitrust complaint in the last year filed by US state and federal officials. District Judge Lucy Koh says she was disturbed that even incognito users were being tracked. Oh man, just wait until she finds out how teenagers are using the internet. She is gonna be not mad, but certainly disappointed. At a hearing, Judge Koh said the company's private browsing promises are a ruse, and that the only acceptable ruses are games of three-card Monty on a collapsible table in the street and making the Statue of Liberty disappear. The suit is seeking $5,000 in damages for each of the millions of people whose privacy has been compromised since June 1st, 2016, looking at upwards of $5 billion in compensation. Now, the big catch, of course, is that you'd need to be willing to confess to using Google's porn mode at any given time. Oh, sorry, did I say porn mode? I meant incognito mode. You'd have to be willing to confess to using Google's incognito mode at any given time. And no doubt, the reason that you went to porn mode is because you had something to hide. Something dark. Something shameful. Probably something illegal. But let's be honest, probably something a little bit fun. But certainly, something that you don't want attached to you in an official court document. These are complicated choices that you have to make when you're this poor. So let's move on to some bigger news now. First off, Antarctic news! Australia has been found to have plans to build a $2 billion concrete airstrip at a base in the Antarctic. So Australia has recently been in a very public spat with China over its disputed expansion of territories into the South China Sea through the building of artificial islands to build military bases on. Now, although we apparently claim to own 42% of Antarctica, you know, all the penguins, thanks to a new study which claims penguins may have evolved in Australia or New Zealand, and frankly we claim anyone that we want from New Zealand. The titular pole of the South Pole, just in case Santa is looking to relocate when problems get too much for the North Pole and he needs a new home. And when the ice sheets melt, pushing the sea levels higher, we will claim all the territories that are flooded by our newly developed waterways. They are, after all, now on Australian waters. It's the British way, and while we are a Commonwealth country, we will acknowledge our colonial roots with gusto. It's actually why we keep the phrase "girt by sea" in the national anthem. The lyric will be used as a precedent for claiming lands girt by liquid Australia. It's pretty logical, to be honest. Now, Australia has proposed to build a $2 billion concrete aerodrome at its Davis base, despite citing a staunch commitment to environmental protection of the Antarctic. Now, this should not surprise anyone who has been paying even the slightest bit of attention to how Australia treats its sovereign territories, simply by destroying them so severely that they are unrecognisable as the natural wonders that they once were, and recovering less than 5% of what we destroyed, then citing that as a victory over the destructive power of Mother Nature, followed by inviting our closest coal and oil lobbyist friends over for a private party where we set up the money-blowing machine and fill it up with so many notes that they can't actually be blown around by the tiny fan inside the booth, allowing the companies to actually just reach down and fill up their pockets until they get so tired from picking up money that they can't even move their arms anymore. Of course, the time that they spend in the booth is also modified because the clock is also broken due to a lack of investment in timekeeping technologies. Australia bluntly states that it has a sovereignty, not just a claim, sovereignty over 5.9 million square kilometres of Antarctica, plus a 2 million square kilometre exclusive economic zone offshore. Now, the only benefit that I've been able to see that may come from this is that in our great desperation as a nation to send anyone attempting to live in Australia anywhere else, preferably an island prison nearby, is that we won't be using this $2 billion airstrip as the runway into a Happy Feet-themed detention centre. So themed, of course, to honour our greatest cultural export, George, yes, I did write Mad Max, Babe, and Happy Feet, Miller. Because we claim that Antarctica is part of Australia, and we will never settle people on Australian soil. Australian ice sheets, or in Australian waters surrounding future Australia expansions. Never, 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 never. exploitative job news now. Underemployment. The only pandemic you can't vaccinate against. So the growing coronavirus problem has highlighted a lot of structural problems within society, depending on your country of origin. The lack of universal healthcare has been devastating for the United States, and the United Kingdom has suffered from a lack of universal competent leadership. Australia's major problem seems to be a distinct lack of secure work. A problem mostly felt in the elderly care and hotel security industries, leading to massive outbreaks in Victoria and a major scare at a pizza shop in Adelaide. The WA government has moved to restrict hotel quarantine security staff to one job only after the state was plunged into a lockdown when a guard tested positive for COVID-19. Most of the staff did request the one job they were restricted to was not infection security, but if I'm taking my advice from internet comments, and I always do, the government can't support these zombie jobs forever, so it's time to put these guys back to work. But the king of the exploitative workplace pay is McDonald's. And tell you what, they are at it again because they're loving it. Arguing that Australia's industrial umpire should be compelled to consider non-monetary benefits such as Happy Meals, chicken nuggets, and Big Macs when asking if a pay deal leaves workers better off. The proposal could help the company trim penalty rates by counting food that staff eats on breaks as a form of benefit that leaves them, quote, better off overall, end quote, compared with the award rate. And guys, this might be an unpopular opinion I'm about to drop, but if you are trading penalty rates for chicken nuggets, you need somebody else to do your negotiating. Even Homer Simpson knew that the dental plan wasn't worth trading for a keg of beer.
Dental plan!
Lisa needs braces.
If we give up our dental plan, I'll have to pay for Lisa's braces!
This is the ultimate manifestation of a business thinking that pizza is a worthy exchange for your labour. That deal is only okay when you're helping a family member or a friend move house. That is the only time! This proposal has prompted backlash from unions, which have long argued against non-monetary benefits. This monetary theory has also been explored by The Simpsons. Here we see Homer.
I wanted a peanut.
$20 can buy many peanuts.
Explain how.
Money can be exchanged for goods and services.
Woohoo!
That is now two times that famous stupid idiot Homer Simpson has shown the idea that you are having is a bad idea. If you cannot beat Homer Simpson in the amount of good ideas that you have, you need somebody else doing your negotiation. But McDonald's, being the capitalist pig dog that it is, submitted the change did not go far enough, calling on the government to ensure the commission must consider the overall benefits, including non-monetary benefits, despite the Attorney General's department clarifying non-monetary benefits were already considered by the Fair Work Commission, and that non-monetary benefits such as flexible working arrangements were what was considered. So, things that can't be turned directly into cash benefits for the McDonald's Corporation. So, you know, you'll have to forgive them for overlooking them. They tend to overlook things that aren't going to help them make money. Now, while I respect their commitment to diversity in the workplace, hiring those who other workplaces won't, such as clowns, birds, sentient burgers, whatever Grimace is supposed to be. He's an alien, yeah? Can we get somebody in the research team on that? I mean, he used to have four arms. Somebody look into this, please. Not to mention their commitment to giving ex-cons a second chance through their Buns for Cons program. But you don't take in the struggling and then underpay them and then deny them rest breaks so much so that it might lead to a class action. I mean, that's a lot of non-breaks. I haven't seen so much non-commitment to something since listening to the Coalition lay out their plans for climate action. Actually, you are making large portions of the Australian working class suffer, trying to take penalty rates from them. It's starting to sound like you're ramping up to run for office. Is that what's happening? Have I broken a major story here? Is Mayor McCheese finally making his big transition from small-time politics to big government? How exciting is this? I mean, I'd love to see him tackle the opposition in a debate. Not that I should be encouraging ex-TV stars to run for office so soon. We sort of just got out of that nightmare. We just narrowly dodged a few dozen bullets as an entire planet. But at least his McParty would have some policies. Even if they were terrible, they'd be committed to something. Anything. Oh, hang on. Wait a minute. I'm getting some noise here in my very real earpiece. This just in. Seems opposition leader Anthony Albanese has remembered that he is running an opposition and campaigning ahead of an upcoming election and has finally promised something. Anything. This is a beautiful day. I just can't believe that Anthony Albanese is actually making some commitments. What is he committing to here? His first choice was to promise gig workers more portable annual sick and long service leave. That's a very smart choice, given the destruction insecure work has wrought over the last year. And the way that the Labor Party has been failing to put up a fight in recent elections, seems the party are investing in their own future as much as that of the working class. It's about fucking time. The federal Labor leader says he's focused on finding solutions to the big challenges in his first major policy speech in 2021. First big challenge that needs a solution is how to get people to believe in them enough to vote for them. Then maybe some less pressing concerns like an increasingly close global climate crisis and economic catastrophe, housing and jobs crisis, and the potential extinction of some of Australia's most iconic species, like the koala, the platypus, and the relatable politician.
I tell you what, any boss who sacks anyone for not turning up to die is a bum.
Albanese has been promising workers a better deal with a suite of reforms to improve job security and provide minimum pay and entitlements to those in insecure work. He says the opposition's message for working people is, Labor is on your side. That's a reference to the party's new election slogan, on your side. Not that anybody would know that because they don't know how to promote themselves. Albanese promised to add job security as an objective in the Fair Work Act, meaning it can be considered every time a pay deal is registered or changes a sort to the award safety net. I suppose job security is not something someone who works in the public sector has ever really needed to think about. After all, they never lose their jobs, no matter how much they fuck up. Not even when they stole money filtered through a family trust, illegally charged poor people with ostensibly theft of government money, then taking it from them by force. Or when they illegally fail to answer Freedom of Information requests within the 30 days as mandated by law. When they spend an undisclosed amount of public money on legal defense for a minister who broke the law for political gain, when they increased the jail time for journalists who report on whistleblowers' truthful allegations, And in the grand scheme of things, these are barely crimes, really. Especially when you can get your collars pressed and cleaned to the whitest whites by people in illegal detention for undisclosed periods. No point having them there if they aren't going to serve the public in some way. And you certainly won't get any sympathy from the Coalition, the masters of your broke-ass destiny, until you find the bootstraps that you're supposed to pull yourself up by. Maybe they're out in the bush. Has anyone tried looking out in the bush to find some bootstraps? Because Finance Minister and man looking desperately for a friend in the crowd who will never show up, Simon Birmingham, told the jobless that there's plenty of work in the bush in an attempt to justify cutting the job seeker support at the end of March. Birmingham indicated there will be little tolerance for those able to work but choosing not to when there are jobs available. Though, I am sure this would be contested by one South Australian woman, Alice, and her partner, Graham, who travelled 2,000 kilometres for a job in Queensland, only to be told the first week of work, a combined 90 hours, was going to be unpaid. Oh, what a pleasant surprise. If someone expects me to work for 7 days unpaid for free, they better be casting me in a play, and at least they would do me the courtesy of offering me exposure for my time. These guys aren't even getting the promise of exposure to that hottest fruit-picking industry executives. Don't fall for their garbage, Alison Graham. You stand strong. But fruit pickers aren't alone in attempting to exploit the poor. A federal government agency has been forced to apologise after it asked Centrelink staff to help minimise contact with vulnerable customers in order to reduce potential customer aggression. The Guardian has described this revelation as shocking. Guys, you are supposed to be investigative reporters. How is the Coalition messing with people on a financial support level shocking to you? You're the number one source for reporting on the robo-debt crisis. Have you not been reading your own reports? In an email sent to staff, Sandy Mamo, a general manager for customer delivery at Services Australia, heralded the beginning of the Vulnerable Customers Innovation Challenge by calling for proposals from workers that would be whittled down by an internal staff vote. And how do you partake in this latest challenge trend? Well, strap in. Staff were asked to respond to the question, how might we serve our vulnerable customers to minimise their need to contact the agency, thereby reducing potential customer aggression? Ha, 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 ha. Cute. Quick question. Has Sandy developed object permanence yet? Because it certainly seems like she hasn't. Just because someone can't call you doesn't mean that they've stopped being angry. I didn't think this was a very big secret. But you should know, Sandy, making it harder to contact the agency definitely makes the customer angrier. I have done extensive fieldwork on this topic with my internet service provider, Belong. Belong! We don't have a phone number. Get a phone number, Belong. This has to be the worst challenge since the Tide Pod challenge. At least Tide Pods only hurt the idiot who ate them. The agency, which is responsible for Centrelink, Medicare, and child support services, so you know, nobody who will truly suffer if they struggle to get their life-sustaining money, is said to have faced a major backlash over the challenge. It has since apologised for how it was worded. Yeah, nailed it, Sandy. The problem here was the way you worded it, not the intention behind the action. I mean, if you were just more honest and said the quiet part out loud, then we wouldn't be able to do this kind of gotcha journalism. Because you would have already confessed. You know, work for Trump. Let's workshop some names for this new challenge, shall we? The out of earshot, out of hope challenge. The best form of welfare is shutting the hell up challenge. The fuck me, no, fuck you challenge. Or the la 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 not listening challenge. If you still want to seem a bit more upbeat and fun. Now, we can hardly say that the task of listening to the needs of the needy is something that the coalition has not been particularly good at. As seen here, when they were reinforcing the cashless debt card system, despite reviews failing to find proof the welfare scheme reduces social harm. And here, Prime Minister and man who has to pay his wife as an empathy consultant because he fails to understand human suffering, a concept even the Terminator managed to learn before it died.
I know now why you cry. But it's something I can never do.
Who argues a $25 per week increase to JobSeeker is appropriate. Which puts us in the complicated position of having to empathize with him in order to understand why he would interpret this as appropriate. Now, if we are being kind, we might argue it is appropriate in that giving a hungry person a pee, and only a pee, every day, is appropriate to help them with their hunger issue, as it is food, technically, even if it is still a woefully inadequate amount of food. You're still giving them food. People on welfare, those kings of lounging, living their most adequate lives, will receive an extra $25 per week to collect and pile in the center of their cave like Smaug, earning more money than they could possibly dream of under the changes to JobSeeker. And from April, we'll receive less money overall due to the end of the coronavirus supplement. But they certainly are in for an appropriate surprise. But heavy is the wallet that bears the reward. It's a complicated life. Recipients will be required to do more to qualify for payments, like attending face-to-face appointments, intensive training after 6 months on welfare, more paperwork for some recipients, and more job searches per month. The boost will, however, take the job seeker allowance to $307 per week. It's all part of the Prime Minister's plan to move back to a normal safety net arrangement as part of that normalizing process. Very normally reassuring us that things will be normal as we normalize normal, everyday, normal things, like making a safety net to catch the poor, but ensuring the safety net is made out of paper mache. Sure, it might catch you, but they can't say that they didn't put it up. Now, reassuring the poor that the payment was now at a 41% of the minimum wage, the same level as during the Howard government, a not-at-all reassuring statement given the Howard era was roughly 20 years ago, and if the reference is to it being a percentage comparison, the JobKeeper payment has been falling further behind relative poverty figures for the past two decades, including rapidly during a period under John Howard. And if you mean as a value, then it's even worse, because welfare, in inflation-adjusted 2020 bills, has fallen further and further behind the poverty line, according to the Grattan Institute. So which is it, Prime Minister? Which of these adequate methods of catching falling, tumbling acrobats do you think makes you look like a good guy? social services minister and woman, surprised to find herself defending this bullshit again. Anne Rustin said the increase was about getting the balance right. We need a system that is fair and sustainable for the people who need it and the taxpayers who pay for it, Rustin said, telling reporters the federal government had sought to strike a balance between offering enough support for jobless Australians and providing a strong enough incentive to regain employment. But unfortunately, due to an overdeveloped right wing, she just found herself flying in concentric circles, heavily favouring the side of providing strong incentive to regain employment. Ugh, where's the balance? Stacking the reasons up. Reasons like not starving to death, affording rent and food, living a life with a tiny shred of dignity, maybe even affording to go to the very job interviews that they are being led to with all the grace and quiet dignity of an anvil covered in squeaky horns and bicycle bells falling down a mountain. Rustin said this approach was so there was still a strong incentive to work and to transition from job seeker to employment. She would then go on to say, they are surprisingly resilient at resisting our standard methods of death by 1,000 tiny neglects. And here they have the audacity to accuse those welfare cheats of having no work ethic. That sounds like a lot of work to me. Although economists, as the natural contrarians and famous social radicals that they are, famous for being, blah, 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 in an interview with the New Daily that job seekers already had a pretty strong incentive to find employment at the current job seeker rate of $715.70 a fortnight. Angela Jackson, lead economist at Equity Economics, claimed, even in the current rate, with the $150 supplement, analysis done by Jeff Borland at Melbourne Uni shows a job seeker recipient is still about $100 better off every day they work on the minimum wage. But how can we take her on her word on a matter so serious? Not only is she a woman, a gender famous for not bringing home the bacon, either literally or symbolically, for reasons yet to be understood, but she works for a non-profit, a sector so stripped of power, influence, or a voice that it might as well be the avatar for a woman during most of history. If she really wanted to help people on JobSeeker, she would have considered going back in time, being a man, and working in the government. I mean, come on. Practice what you preach, Angela. Employment Minister Michaela Cash, who is out there at least trying, as she is in government position, although she did neglect to be a man, so she loses at least a few points on failing to stick the man landing, the manding, boom. Cash said the government would do everything to move people from welfare into work. A somewhat ominous statement from a government that seems to have misplaced its entire collection of vintage scruples. Perhaps they locked them up on one of their many island paradise prisons, putting their scruples in indefinite detention and not allowing them to have access to phones or journalists in the hopes that the public might forget that the scruples ever existed. Let alone that they're supposed to guide the conscience and decisions of an entire political party. It's quite outrageous, really. An excellent example of the kind of kind and compassionate expectations that you can expect from the Coalition. She announced employers would now be able to report recipients who turned down work. A totally reasonable and not at all ready to be abused system set up to benefit the worst of the worst employers who may have something of a vindictive streak in them because they're sick of being abused about the poor working conditions, substandard pay rates, or the sleazy, bordering on abusive use of authority and influence. Oh, what a hassle. Though, the changes will have to pass Parliament before they are implemented and will form the stage settings for one of the levels of the latest PlayStation game, Mortal Kombat. Unlockable characters include Bob Catter, Pauline Hanson. They don't even give you the strong stuff up front. I mean, those are the ones that everyone wants to play. And classic characters like Bob Hawke, Gough Whitlam, Robert Menzies, and Harold Holt. Though it is very difficult to find him. Economists seem to be one of the few groups willing to defend welfare recipients, having publicly decried the dole bludger myth, saying the argument, like every house of cards I have attempted ever, doesn't stack up. The changes mark the first above-inflation increase in the nation's base unemployment rate since 1994. 1994! Nothing that happened in 1994 should be more relevant than something that's happening today. And this is a rate of $3.57 a day, less than the cup of coffee that they tell me not to buy every day in order for me to be able to save up for a house that I'll never afford. And look, I don't know about the rest of the country, but in Melbourne, it is actually a crime not buying a cup of coffee every day under the John So, here's our cup of Joe rule of 2001. Just letting you know. Given the cost of a daily ticket on a Mikey is actually $4.50, the timing of the JobSeeker pay rise on April 1st couldn't be better. April Fool's Day is back, baby! And looking to make fools of more people than that time that the BBC reported on the Swiss spaghetti tree in 1957. Remember that? What a good time. A survey released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics on Monday. A survey released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics found that paying household bills was the most common use of the temporary coronavirus supplement, with 80% of recipients, followed by spending on groceries with 60%. Then we are looking at some of your more our current affairs worthy fear-mongering spending expenses like surfing, sitting around a train station, and youth going wild! Who could stand for it? The structural purpose of unemployment is, of course, fear. Fear that you can be replaced by someone more desperate than you who will not complain about the conditions you are forced to work in. Which is why the Morrison government will not accept any amendments or attempts to increase the new pay rate. As you'd expect, it's been blasted by welfare groups that warn hundreds of thousands of Australians will be plunged back into poverty without a more substantial boost. But, I mean, let's be honest, they are just a biased bunch of lefty extremists with no idea about what it's like to run an actual business with jobs and real-world consequences. You know, like Deloitte. What did Deloitte have to say? Surely they'd have a strong voice of reason in this argument. Deloitte said, every dollar getting pumped back into the Australian economy is doing more good than ever before. And Deloitte has run consulting on US unemployment websites that run very poorly. So they have plenty of incentive to not give unemployed people the support that they need. But seems they were visited by the ghost of poverty past, present, and future in the night and have awoken in time to discover that Tiny Tim is not dead yet. And there is still time. Go, boy, go! Get the biggest turkey you can! People on JobSeeker for more than 6 months will have to work for the dole or engage in an intensive training program of short courses. So, they're finally offering some free education, something that we've been asking for a really long time. And this is the best version of free education that they could come up with? Learning to write resumes and learning to do job interviews? What a terrible joke. You would be better investing in people's futures by giving them free arts degrees than this Serena Russo style intensive training. I've done it before. It's terrible. I mean, it really is a cruel joke. This would be the kind of joke that if I told it, I would be called insensitive and I'd be cancelled by both sides of politics for making fun of welfare recipients. This is the kind of cruel and insensitive comment that would likely get me re-elected or boost my party support. That's how cruel it is. Something you would expect someone like Matt Canavan to say as he praised the government's new rules for job seekers, accusing unemployed people of playing Xbox on the couch instead of wanting to do work for a living. Psst, nobody tell him about esports. He will be confused and angry. He might even yell at a cloud for sitting around all day and not delivering rain like it's supposed to. Well, then there's Peter Credlin, seen here saying the quiet part out loud, as she said, "Let's never forget, the dole is not supposed to be a living wage." Much like Sky News, despite its news-like appearance and name, is not meant to be a news source. This is where the welfare lobby gets it badly wrong, she claims. No one who is capable of work should expect to live off the taxpayer. And if anybody knows about unnecessary living off the public purse, it's Rupert Murdoch and his many, many media empires. Days after the federal government announced that they would increase the permanent rate of JobKeeper by $25 a week and renaming it More Money Than You Can Dream Seeker, progressive think tank, the Australian Institute, published a new analysis showing that higher unemployment benefits are correlated with lower rates of unemployment across the OECD. The report author, Matt Grudnoff, said the findings proved the Morrison government was being unnecessarily cruel to the unemployed and that lower unemployment is possible even with much higher unemployment payments. An observation that could have been made by a sixth grader collecting a collage of stories centered around the actions of its protagonist, one Scott Morrison, towards those who are poorer than him. But it is good to have an expert opinion to back up what we've all been saying for many, many years. Matt said, if the government was right in saying lower unemployment benefits were necessary to encourage jobless Australians to seek out new opportunities, Australia would have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the OECD in 2019. As at the time, it had the lowest unemployment benefit. Ah, a very excellent burn from an economist. A job not at all famous for its dry humour and biting wit. Though he failed to follow up the slam by shouting, "Oh!" or having the DJ air horn play that "wow wow," and a match commentator scream, "Can you believe it? Can you believe it?" as he ripped off his shirt and ran around the room in a celebratory manner, encouraging audience members to give it up, to give it up, to give it up, and give in to their more animalistic urges. So, you know, he loses points for not sticking out landing, but still, a good burn. Australia had only the 20th lowest unemployment rate out of 33 OECD countries. At the time, it had a jobless rate of 5.2%, which was below the OECD averages of 5.6%, noting Germany has unemployment benefits twice as high as Australia's. The net replacement rate of unemployment in Germany is 59% compared to Australia at 27%, and Germany's unemployment rate is lower than Australia's at 3.2% compared to 5.2% for Australia. And while he didn't say it directly, nobody ever draws a comparison with Germany without the undertone being, "And that's where the Nazis are from!" It's one of those unspoken laws of communication, like the answer to "How are you?" or any of its many variants is always "Good, thanks," not "Could be better, I'm currently drowning in debt due to a job loss and the ever-diminishing support payments from a cruel and uncaring government body who couldn't win an election on their own without forming a coalition dragging parties into a Voltron-like combination of cruelty and corruption." Just makes things a little too real for the grocery shop interaction. But although the correlation between the two is not actually evidence of causation, Grundorf says it shows the government is wrong to assume that higher unemployment payments cause higher unemployment. Which puts a bit of a sting in Scott Morrison's favourite mantra. Say it with me now, the best form of welfare is a job. But I've been thinking about it. Maybe he isn't wrong. He's just withholding the most important piece of the story. The best form of welfare is a job, but the best form of welfare is a job as a government employee. See, hear me out here. You can grift, steal, lie, cheat, and refuse to explain yourself and not even have to leave your job. Your boss will even come out and defend you under the worst possible circumstances, saying that you're innocent and that you won't even be asked to take some time off, which is good as far as consistent messaging goes, because they will not support an underdog and they simply will not pay somebody to stay at home and not do a job. Besides, it's only multiple sexual assault charges. It's not like they're accused of going surfing. Why would they care? And finally, former prime ministers running their mouth to create a smokescreen news. Former prime minister and Australia's angry ex, who did the one good thing one time and has been coasting on the goodwill ever since, John Howard, has called for religious schools to have anti-discrimination exemption. Did I read that correctly? Am I reading that right? Okay, I mean, alright. Look, I'll keep reading because it's my job, but really? Really? Yeah. Okay. I mean, maybe he has good reasons. Should we? Let's see. Let's see what he says and I'll get on. Seems Howard has called for people in authority to oppose woke culture. If Howard weren't a Liberal Party lifer, then Sky News would be running wild with the headline, "No woke culture," says woke anti-gun baby. But it's just good to see a man of principle, really, even in overwhelming evidence of the evolution of culture, like the many times that he refused to apologise to the Indigenous people for the, well, let's just call it the everything, really. And I'm sure this is all the stirring up of the left, has nothing to do with attempting to create a smokescreen for the allegations of rape culture in the Liberal Party so that they could slip under the smoke like Batman in the middle of conversation. Howard has told Christian organisation Family Voice Australia, and presumably anybody who will listen to his old man ideas, religious schools needed the right to teach the principles of their faith and not employ somebody who is barracking for the other side. Because I guess the entire extra class of religious education doesn't cover that gap in much needed brainwashing, brain hanging out to dry, and brain accidentally leaving it out in the sun for too long and it gets like a weird faded color on one half. But who knows? Arguing that schools should be able to hire teachers based on whether they accept the beliefs of the school is based on, in the same way, political parties favour staff who believe in a party's ideals. No doubt that he would be outraged to learn that the students of the Little Buddha School of Zen are teaching kids to not burden themselves with unnecessary things like education, jobs, and anger that can be harnessed by the coalition's angered-powered sailboat, which helps them coast over the heads of the people that they try to fool into voting against their best interests. In a presentation to Family Voice Australia, Howard also called for people in authority to more actively oppose woke culture, that is, trying to alter society in Australia. You know, that woke culture, always wanting to hold the unchecked power of the powerful in some attempt of balance. Or, say, giving a voice to someone who, though she worked for the Liberal Party, has had trouble agreeing with its increasingly apparent party value of we will do what we want, and feebly defend it by waving religion and the rule of law in your face. Even if the two stances of the PM, saying that we don't have the tribe has spoken law, and Howard claiming that they should allow the tribe to have a binding law protecting it, contradict each other. Weird how that happens. Liberal MP Kevin Andrews has said that he believed Attorney General and man, suddenly very well known by the Australian public, Christian Porter, has a revised version of the religious freedom legislation ready to present to Parliament. Porter produced a second draft of the bill in December 2019 and prepared to introduce it to the Parliament early last year. The COVID-19 pandemic overtook all government business, which, given Scott Morrison's love of controversial religious variation and out-of-control, long-form adaptation of Jesus Christ Superstar, the Hillsong Church, might explain why he has been so reluctant to dismiss Porter. Porter, back when people would ask him about things that weren't about his history of sexual violence, told The Guardian that the government's immediate priorities are protecting the health of all Australians. A statement that has not aged well in light of recent accusations. I suppose these health concerns don't go so far as to, say, covering the people who work for you. Regarding woke culture, Howard noted instances of absurd language, memorandums distributed within public service organisations and universities that called for dropping the use of words like mother and father or brother and sister. And Howard is not one to simply let others tell him what he should and shouldn't say to another group of people, unless that group of people are a not very particular religion, then they can be told to fuck right off and start their own state-supported private education institute and teach their own version of brain pollutant. Earn your place through extortion, theft, deceiving the uneducated, colonization, suppression of culture, and lobbying of political parties, like everybody else did. This prime position doesn't come cheap. But you best do it ethically, or the woke brigade will take you down and try to tell you who you can or cannot speak to, or what about. He said his views on woke culture were in line with the views of about 80% of the Australian community, and that has to be articulated and articulated very strongly by people in authority. Now, I am not sure where he is getting his statistics from. Seems he's just pulling stats from nowhere, and that is a game that I can play. So let's talk stats. It's weird that he thinks that 80% of Australians are articulating strong feelings on work culture, because 85% of Australians are in line with the view that John Howard can sit the fuck down before we cancel his favourite jogging suit manufacturer. 70% of Australians are also in line with the view that a young John Howard was actually responsible for the disappearance of Harold Holt, because his stance against people in the water offshore of Australia is so strong that he couldn't stand the idea that Holt had gone overboard even when he was a child. 95% of Australians are in line with the view that some of the reason you spent so much money and time digging in the middle of the Australian desert was because of a secret underground bunker where you keep a backup supply of tracksuit and running shoes in the event that the world suffers an irrevocable weather change due to climate change. A much lower 63% of Australians are in line with the view that John Howard also took the guns because they're now in a separate secret bunker, and the character of the leader of Bullet Town in Mad Max is based on Howard. It might seem like I'm hung up on digging secret bunkers here, but you just were so obsessed with digging holes. It has to be for a reason. 37% of Australians are in line with the view that there is no Yowie. It's just John Howard going bush and wandering around, grunting and making a connection with nature as he shouts to the stars like a sad lost boy, regretful of his actions, but in too deep to come clean. So he goes out there and sacrifices koalas to the god of all lost sad boys, Ayn Rand. And 100% of Australians are aware of your ill-timed attempt to rattle woke culture is actually a poor magician's trick, attempting to get us to look over here, while you try to sneak a sexual assault charge past the public for forgetting that the trap door that you need to drop down is actually in the center of the stage, and that you sold our booming mid-stage set piece industry off back in the 2000s. Thank you for listening and making it all the way to the end. Thanks for sticking around for another episode. I know it's been a bit of a long time, and getting it up has been quite slow. My computer broke, and I've had issues with the editing and getting things up. Hopefully things will be smooth from here on out. Please do come check out all my shows in the Comedy Festival. I've got 8 storytelling shows. I'm just keeping it really simple this festival. I just love to get up on stage and tell you some stories. I think that'd be a good time for all of us. I'm going to keep putting these up. I'll probably put another news quiz up before the festival starts, and that'll be up for free, and you guys can check that out. I don't know who I'll get in on that yet, but I think it'll be a good time, so you guys should check those things out. Maybe go back, watch the old news quiz episodes. We've got some excellent guests on those. Daniel Muggleton, Daniel Oyama, Angela Vaupierre, who else? Beck Hill, John Gracie from Werewolf Live. There's some excellent guests. My battery's running out though, so I've got to get going. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll see you next time. Stay safe, wash your hands, and look out for each other. Bye!